best ever. Part A, how good?
Yeah, Part A was awesome. Looking forward to Part B.
Mate, the stories, that's what we wanted to tell, the football stories. Yeah, those old school days that Birch was a pioneer, yeah?
Yeah, exactly right. And nostalgia seems to be hitting everyone exactly where it should be, eh? And that's the reason why we started the podcast.
Now, this podcast is brought to you by Ignify Legal. Buying or selling property and needing expert legal advice, contact Ian and the team on 8823 3309. We can't thank Ian and the team at Ignify Legal enough, so thanks. And Andy Burnell, welcome back, mate. Thanks for hanging around, and we're going to get it stuck into Part B.
Still here. Enjoyed the first half.
And look, we want, it's great. The people wanted to hear the Andy Burnell story, mate, and we hope. You enjoyed that first part?
I thought it was great. There's always things that you kind of maybe listen back to, you know, later on and think you could have said more or whatever. But I think, you know, we've really, we captured a lot of stuff there that, you know, people that will grab the book will kind of, you know, be even, you know, we'll get some more information. But they've got a little kind of foundation, a little platform to build on now. But it's, yeah, some amazing times.
How good. Now, your illustrious football career then turns post-career into agent to the Stars. And stars like David Beckham, Tim Cahill, Tommy Rogic, Carl Valeri, and the one and only Daniel Severino.
Yeah.
As part of your camp. Not sure who's bigger.
That's a stitch up.
So there's that many questions we could start with, but talk us through how you landed that role, I guess, and that sentence I just use, agents of the Stars.
Look, I think I was coming to the end of my career at Reading. I'd played there close to 7 seasons, over 200 games, and a wonderful time. But it was time to move on. I perhaps probably hadn't planned as well for the end day. And by chance, I was having a chat with one of the ladies that was a sponsor at Reading Football Club, and she was the head of Foster's and Courage, you know, a big brewing company in the UK. And she said she was good friends with a guy called Tony Stevens, who was David Beckham's agent, and also managed David Platt, and, you know, he had Michael Owen, Steven Gerrard. There was a good client, you know, a good roster. And she said, oh, you'd probably make a good agent. You know, spruce up, put the suit on, nice tie, you know, walk into Mayfair. And she probably had me at that. And she had me at that. And I said, oh, well, let's give this a go. So yeah. She said, look, I'll organise a meeting with Tony's very, very busy man. And if you get 5 minutes, you'll have done really, really well. I'll cut out a bit of the story, but, you know, an hour and a half later, I rang her up and I said, I think I've done really, really well. And
still in there.
Yeah, still in there. And but it was one of those scenarios where, you know, the power of the big football world and the sporting world really kind of hit home immediately. I got out of the, you know, the London cab and in Grosvenor Street, Mayfair. You know, for those that play Monopoly, just check out Mayfair and Park Lane. Yep, the blue ones.
Yeah, the blue ones. Right?
Yeah, $400. Yeah, those ones. Yeah.
They're the expensive ones, right?
That's the ones. Yeah, yeah. So I got out of the cab there, and you know, you go into this flashy kind of Mayfair, you know, building, and you know, immediately the names hit you. You know, Michael Jordan, Kobe Bryant, David Beckham, you know, and David at the time was arguably or possibly the greatest superstar on the planet, you know, married to a Spice Girl.
Yeah.
You know, that was kind of
big deal.
Yeah, the fact that they were together at that particular point in time was big.
It's creating their own brand.
Yeah, so, you know, you walked in there and everything was, it was top level, top notch. But I felt comfortable. You know, I didn't feel like I didn't belong in there. For some reason, I felt really comfortable in there. I knew that I could, you know, in terms of finding players, you know, that I had an ability to and a good eye to see a player early, you know, to kind of see things in a player that, you know, and if you're starting out in the agent game, that's a good quality to have, because you know, you need, especially when you're coming back to Australia, you get taken on by a big global company and they say, go out and find players in Australia, yeah? Go out and find us a next superstar. It's easy if you're in Brazil.
Mm.
It's easy if you're in England. You know, there's like a multitude of...
There's lots of players there.
Yeah, you know. Go find me a kid that's an ex-Beckham or an ex, you know, for our company.
In Australia?
Yeah, an Australian kid. You know, it was hard to find one in Australia. I found an Australian one, and you know, I got given about the kind of the test as such was you got 3 months to find the next superstar, you know, out of Australia. So 24 hours later, I took Tim Cahill and Lucas Neal to the office in Mayfair.
Wow!
Really?
Yeah. And Timmy ended up signing, and Lucas didn't. You know, we spoke. We were friends. You know, he had management at the time, and he thought, you know, it wasn't for him.
Yep.
But not even an issue, you know. They were surprised that, you know, I rocked in with two Aussies the next day, and Timmy was the one they wanted. He was, you know, killing the lower divisions of English football. You know, he's a proper warrior.
Yeah.
You know, he's got everything to. He had the whole lot. That whole package, and they were really, really chasing him. They couldn't get him. You know, they could not get him, and I got him.
Yeah, good.
For SFX.
Yeah.
And, you know, the rest is history. You know, he was playing for Samoa at the time, or had played for Samoa.
So yep.
Part of it was kind of fixing that with FIFA.
Yeah.
And the other part was getting him to the attention of the national coach, Frank Farina, who was a teammate of mine at the AOS. And... yeah, I called Frank, and it's in the book. But I said to Frank, if you were going to war, would you take me? And he said, yeah. And I said, well, if I was going to war, I'd take Tim Cahill. And a few weeks later, Tim made his soccer debut at Loftus Road v South Africa.
How good's that?
So when you talk about Agent of the Stars and we talk about all that, you were able to leverage a lot of relationships then that you'd built up from AIS days and football throughout Spain, England, yeah, and those sort of things, yeah?
Yeah, I think it's one quality that I kind of have or comes natural, you know. Whether I'm in a ghetto somewhere or whether I'm in a high-powered, you know, boardroom somewhere, I kind of have the ability to mix in with everybody and not be better or lesser than anybody. It's just something that I probably got off dad and mum, and you know, I'm good with people,
yep,
you know, and it just kind of comes natural. So I've always been able to... I like to find out about people. I like to study. I like to understand them. I like to have a chat with the guy picking up the garbage outside here tonight. You know, what's he about?
Yeah.
You know. What's he going through? Good life, bad life. You know, just it's important to me. You know, I like hearing human stories, and you know, all those things come together so that when you do have to represent big stars or you're placed in situations, you know, you're kind of comfortable in it. You know, for me now, if you said, you know, we've got to go do a deal with the New York Yankees for an Aussie baseball or something, it's like no drama. I was in with Madrid doing a deal with Beckham when he signed.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, so it's it kind
comes
of
naturally.
Yeah, it kind of becomes comfortable. It's just, it's the same thing as doing a deal at the Panthers or the Roosters. It's just different noughts and different decimal points.
Yeah, yeah. And you tell that story, like you said, you like to get to know everyone. You tell the story about how he turned up at your parents' house and stuff like that.
That was a funny one, actually, because he rocks up and then he's like, oh, shit, I think I've left my wallet or my phone somewhere at the 7-Eleven or something.
Yeah, yeah.
And in the car, off he goes. I'm thinking, fuck, man, this guy's not going to come back.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Something's
happened
here.
Something's happened here. No good.
Came back, and then what he said was, I remember we were sitting there talking for about an hour or so. He goes, look, this is what you're going to do. This is where you're going to go, blah, blah. And one thing he said to me, which I tell everyone, eh, he goes, you never know. My brothers actually say it to me to this day. They actually go, hey, do you remember the time Birch came over and he said this? And this is what he said. He goes, the beauty about England is, he goes, this time next year you could be playing against Manchester United in the FA Cup final. And a year later, who played in the FA Cup final against Manchester?
Yeah, Millwall played it,
Millwall.
And it was just, it was said kind of, not even in jest, it was said kind of like, that's the madness of the game.
Just because you had lived and played it. You know, like, it's things happen. I remember you said to me as well, England happens so fast.
Yeah,
it's just...
Football happens so fast. I'm working at Woollahra Council as a ranger, you know, first 3 months slash dog catcher. You know, I'm chasing people off at Watson. I'm chasing 101 Dalmatians at Watson's Bay. Seriously, like, I'm the worst dog catcher in the history of Woollahra Council, apparently. Like. And at 28, Mick Hickman comes back. He's assistant coach at Reading, and he says, we'd like you to come and play for us at Reading. Who does that at 28?
Yeah.
Like, clubs don't seek players at 28.
No.
And people that play at this level in the A-League or NSL at 28, they're just not good enough to go and play. And but it was,
yeah.
I was able to because I'd been there before and I kind of knew the adjustments to make.
Yeah.
You know, that was, but it's...
And offer the advice to those of who you were looking after, right? Because you knew you'd done it.
Oh, well, it's important to... there's levels in the game, you know, and, you know, everybody... what I try and be is honest, you know. I've been through the whole initial stages with SFX where you'd come out to Australia and, you know, Bernie Mandich was around looking after Kiel. So there's a competition between two or three agents and it was almost a one-upmanship all the time. Like, oh, if Bernie come round, you'd go around to someone's house and they'd say, oh, Bernie was just round here and he can take us to Liverpool. So, you know, I go, well, I can take you to Real Madrid. And I'm just over that shit. Like, you know what? It's black or white. I've seen you play. I think you can get to this level, but you've got to do this, this and that. Some people don't like it.
Yeah.
Some people don't like hearing the truth. Some people live in a delusional world. Oh, you know, if someone
told me this, I can do it.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I can play for Manchester United. No, you can't. You can't play for Central Coast Mariners. How are you going to play for? how are you going to play for Man United? Do you know what I mean? It's
I get it.
And the parents, more so the parents.
Mm, that's what we're. Oh, yeah.
You know, like, oh, little Johnny. I get parents coming up and go, look, you've got to come and watch my son play. He plays like Iniesta. He looks like him too. I go and watch him play and I'm like, I leave after 5 minutes.
Yeah. So he might look like him, but he doesn't play like him.
Oh, mate, just shocking. It's the whole delusion thing. And it's something that, you know, when I kind of at 15, 16, 17 used to sit at school and think, you know, I want to play at the Bernabeu Stadium. I want to play at the Nou Camp. I want to play against Valencia in a full house at Valencia. Like, do you know, I could smell the place. I could smell the grass. I could see it, you know, and teachers and, you know, all the normal crap.
Yeah, yeah. What are you staring out the window for?
Yeah. But I honestly...
Yeah.
You know, and that's what I try and instill in the young kids these days. Like, you know, if you can't smell that shit, if you can't kind of breathe it, you know, you have to breathe it. You have to, so yeah, that's it. So that's what I try and instill in young kids now.
So take us, obviously, SFX Sports Management and Beckham himself.
Yeah.
It's all in the book and everyone can read it. But give us a little insight into day-to-day with Beckham and basically his right-hand man, yeah?
Yep.
That's what we're talking about.
Yep. You know, we'd met in the office many times previously when he was playing for Manchester United. And obviously Tony Stevens, his agent, part of the recruitment of myself was the fact that I could speak Spanish and speak a fair bit of Italian as well. So, you know, we ended up placing people like Robbie Keane at Inter Milan.
Okay.
I was able to take Carl Valeri, who had a good soccer career, to Inter Milan. He signed at Inter as well.
Yep.
So part of my role was developing relationships with Italian clubs, with Spanish clubs. And, you know, before we even went to Madrid, you know, I'd spent, you know, the previous year talking to Spanish clubs, going around all of Italy and Spain, you know, building those relationships. And, you know, I met with Valdano and Butragueño, two legends that were joint directors of football a year before.
Really?
Before Beckham went to Real Madrid. This is unknown to anybody.
Wow.
I met with them at the Bernabeu and I gave them three names. One was David Beckham, one was Michael Owen, and the other one was Jonathan Woodgate. And the three of them ended up signing for Real Madrid.
Wow. Yeah.
Jonathan Woodgate had, you know, his career was cut short through injury, but he was quality as a young man at Leeds United. And Owen was, look, I can't knock Michael Owen. He's a fantastic striker, you know, Liverpool, brilliant striker. Probably not a Galactico type that Spanish crowds and Real Madrid would, you know,
thrive on.
They want the Maradona, the Ronaldo, Nazario types. And Owen, you know, whilst being a world-class finisher and striker, probably didn't bring that kind of skill.
That continental type.
And it's not been disrespectful to Michael Owen because the guy had speed and finishing ability and a wonderful striker.
Yeah.
But you know, when you're talking, you know, the Maradonas, Ronaldo Nazario, this and that, like it's just that little bit of extra kind of
A difference.
Yeah, something that kind of like a bit of magic, you know, on top of the greatness.
Yeah, on top of exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly right.
So that's a massive thing, Beckham leaving United.
Yeah, and it all kind of happened around the boot incident, you know, when kicked the boot and this and that. And I go into it more in detail in the book, but it was at a time where there was a meeting I had at Barcelona with Carlos Rexach, who was the director of football at the time. And from that meeting, David hadn't signed for Real Madrid yet, and after my meeting, they agreed, I think it was €35 million transfer fee, Barcelona and Manchester United. But obviously, it never happened because you need the player to want to go there as well.
Of course.
Yeah. And David was always going to Real Madrid.
Was he?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, you go to Barcelona and even if you know that to a certain extent, you say to them, no deal's been done. It just creates greater leverage.
There's the agent, right?
Yeah, you've got the two greatest football clubs on the planet. Yeah,
At least the two biggest. A fallback, right?
Yeah. So that was that was a good day too. I took Daryl Mather, one of Australia's leading rugby league agents, with me that day to Barcelona. He looks after Cleary, the dad and the son, and has looked after many of the fine rugby league players of this country. And he was sat in there. He was thinking like, geez, these figures are just kind of like...
that's all points in the wrong spot.
Yeah, it was like, you know, it's the whole NRL salary cap, like, you know.
In one player. One player.
Oh, wow.
So that was a good day. So that's kind of... There was a few things that happened that I explained more in detail in the book of how that transfer kind of eventuated. But as it happened, Daryl and I left Barcelona that day. We continued our tour of Spain, and then we came back to Australia. And a month later, I kind of knew I was going to be getting a phone call because it had already been discussed if David went to Spain at some stage that I would be his right-hand man.
Wow.
Yeah, I'd played with some ex-teammates of his. We had spoken. We'd met at some marketing events in the UK, some Pepsi events where Dwight York was at as well, and David's wife Victoria was there also, and I was one of the boys. I was allowed.
So we're talking right hand man, as in literally next, looking after him day to day.
You couldn't get to him without going through me.
Yeah,
You know, so that entailed. You know, around us, we always had SAS commandos. In Spain, we also added ex-Cuban intelligence officers. You know, so you're talking. The Spain thing was insanity.
But that's Beckham himself, right? He was that big at the time, yeah.
Yeah. He was that big that Real Madrid couldn't cope to a certain extent with. Yeah. As soon as the plane landed, the day he arrived to sign his contract, we're waiting. I'm on the tarmac, waiting for a private jet. They land. As soon as we leave the military air force base, we're onto the main kind of outside kind of highway that leads into Madrid. From that moment on, you've seen nothing like it.
Really?
Paparazzi, like hundreds of them on motorbikes, 150 km, 200 km an hour. You know, one of them riding, facing forwards, the other one with the camera facing backwards, you know, trying to get shots in the car. Helicopters above the car from every station, CNN, everything. Yep, and then you've got a military helicopter coming in, you've got the police helicopter, they're all fighting each other to try and, like, to see Beckham.
Wow, really?
It's just, and so every day, every single day that I was with him was a military operation. So you'd go and check the cars in the morning for bombs. You'd be getting updates from English spy agencies about kidnap threats on the boys. Insanity.
You're kidding.
And I was trained for none of this, but got given the keys for it.
And just do what
Andy,
you do.
Andy, you're in charge, mate. And the madness is, so the English guys, the commandos, as highly skilled as they were in everything, they needed me because they couldn't speak Spanish. And then we brought the Cubans in, and they couldn't speak English, so they couldn't communicate.
And you're in the middle.
And I'm in the middle. They needed me for everything, you know. And then Ronaldo Nazario is going, "Come to a party, brother."
And you don't know what to do.
I've got three busloads of chicks coming. Three busloads of Victoria's Secret models on the way.
You're trying to stay at home.
You know.
How was Bex through all this? Because was it like?
You know what, he, there was a couple of times, he found it frustrating. I don't think he initially thought it would be as bad. You know, he's being followed all the time, you know. It's happened, but I think what makes it kind of, this whole story as well, it was just at a particular point in time, in life, in history, where Real Madrid had amassed five of the greatest players that have ever lived, Galacticos. Yeah. You know, David was England captain. You know, he was the English superstar, married to the Spice Girl. You know, going into a team that had Zidane, Ronaldo Nazario, Carlos, Figo. You know, world footballers.
Raul.
You know,
Roberto,
like,
Carlos.
Yeah, just the greatest setup.
So were you at training with watching training?
Yeah,
that would have been unreal.
Well, that's a great question you've come up with. It's, and I mentioned that in the book, you know, it was the madness that we had outside of the training ground and outside of the hotel. I kind of found my peace. You know, I'd sit there with a little
sitting
Brooklyn.
In the grandstand.
Brooklyn's 21 now, you know. But he was, you know, two or three at the time, and, you know, I'd sit. Not on the grandstand, I'd sit right next to on the training pitch. You know.
Wow.
Kiroz is giving the team talk, and me and the kid are like 20 metres away.
Wow.
Yeah. We were kicking a ball around once after a car chase, and I won't go on about the car chase.
Yeah, you leave that.
But after the car chase, the kid was emotionally moved. It was a real bad
horrific
day. Yeah, it was horrific. You know, it was like, I tell you now, there were times where I thought I would die in a car crash with David Beckham as Princess Diana.
Wow.
Died. Yeah, yeah.
Wow,
yeah,
really?
Yeah, and I say that, like, honestly, I do not lie about that. It's the insanity. It was after the first day.
It never let up.
Never let up.
Never let up.
Never let up. So after one of these famous car chases, you know, and you're going in high-powered vehicles.
Yeah.
You know, it's Porsches and Ferraris and, like, you know.
That are moving. They're
Fine. And you're trying to lose, you know, 50, 60, 100 paparazzi, you lose 10, it's like Fortnite, more come.
Yeah, it's slowing down.
It's like these games. No. So it's all out. It's all out war. You lose three, another three come. So we got to training and they're doing set pieces around Madrid. And me and the little kid are behind the goal. And Figo, Ronaldo, Roberto Carlos, Beckham, they're all doing set pieces, corners, this and that. And Kiroz is giving instructions. And I don't know if it was me or the kid. we were kicking a ball around, and we miscued it, and it ends up in the middle of it's bouncing. It's bouncing. You know, we're 30 yards away, and this ball bounces into Carlos Quiroz giving his team talk. Yeah, and as it's bounced the second, third time, Roberto Carlos has pinged it on the bounce to me, swerved around Quiroz and hit me directly on the chest. And like everyone's gone, no. You know, like the goal against France.
Really?
Yeah, it's gone boom, boom, and he's gone ping. And the ball's gone, shoo, gone past Quiroz and hit me, gone boom, and he's gone.
You just
and it just defused the whole situation.
Really?
Quiroz is gone.
Wow, yeah, forget it. Yeah. Trickly.
Yeah. Like, well, about to crack out.
Yeah. What do you say? You know, and you tell someone at a bar in Canberra 20 years later, they think you're mad.
It happens.
Yeah.
But you're talking world class.
Yeah, eh? Yeah. This was like, you know, and I'd watch them. I'd sit there and watch, you know, I could, if you said to me, Figo, Zidane, Roberto Carlos, Beckham, yeah, four wonderful free kick experts.
Yeah, yes? Pick your best one.
Yeah, well, I could analyse, I could give you an analytical report of the movement of the hip, the knee, the standing foot, where it ends, where it doesn't end. Wow. And you'll find something that Beckham does different to the others.
So was Beckham in that group still the best free kick taker?
For me,
yeah.
The greatest.
For
me, the greatest dead ball exponent.
Yeah.
And at the right moments, you step up against Greece.
Yeah, that's still the best.
30 seconds to go.
That's still.
30 seconds to go from what, 30 yards or something? Yeah. And you put it in the top corner. A nation expecting.
You know, and expecting. Like he had to do it, mate.
Oh, no, yeah, a nation expecting.
Yeah.
There is no room for error.
If he didn't score that one.
Yeah, yeah.
Someone would have found him.
Yeah. You know, just, you know, at the right time. But, you know, I would watch them train. And I took the St. George Rugby League team. They came over for a study. Barnhill, Brown, McGregor, all those boys.
Yeah.
And Ronnie goes, don't worry about studying. He goes, I take you to nightclub tonight. Yeah.
So, Ronaldo.
Yeah, Ronaldo Nazario. So he, so the boys roll up. A nightclub, and it's like, you know, an hour queue, top nightclub in Spain, like five, six floors, and they all get there, you know, the Aussie boys are rolled up.
Yeah.
Oh, mate. And they all get like a little tag, and Ronaldo sorted out, and
skip the queue.
Yeah, they're going, oh, the boys are going, oh, sis, and I go, free drinks all night. And they go, oh, yeah.
Oh, that would have destroyed that, mate. Can't take the Aussie out of Australia, can you?
But, you know, 7 in the morning, who's the last man standing?
Ronaldo
Nazario. You know, and he just, the boys were in awe of him. They were going like, man, this guy could, imagine him in the centre of State of Origin. Oh, man, like just, and you looked at Roberto Carlos, and I looked at these guys at training, just, you know, physiologically like world-class
different
athletes. And yeah, Ronaldo was like a 100-metre sprinter. Mm. You know, if he doesn't have his knee injuries, he's now in the top three for me of all time with knee injuries. Yeah. Without knee injuries, oh my God. And, you know, party central. You know,
was he?
Busloads. Like, you know, but not like, I've got some friends coming. It's like, Andy, I've got three buses of models from coming. Like, yeah, don't go. Well, where are you going? There's another bus coming. Yeah, I'm flying people in. I'm doing this. I'm like, madness. And I'm talking like, you know, not B grade and C grade. Like, this is
top notch.
Yeah, like the insanity of it.
So, Birch, how do you switch off? Like, you've just given us a whole day to day intense. What happens when you put your head on the pillow?
Very difficult. At when I was with David,
it's nearly a 24-hour job. Yeah.
I'll be honest with you. Those first 4 months, I. And that's when it kind of ended. So the first 3-4 months of his introduction, the previous year and the first 3-4 months was the time I was with him by his side, which were the most important ones because you're going to a new club, you're going to a new dressing room. They don't speak English. You know, so Zidane.
So they needed you.
Oh, Ronaldo and Roberto Carlos were on to me all day, texting. Like, I was
they
going nuts.
A piece of Bex
Everyone wanted a piece of Bex.
He was a rock star. It was like the Beatles had come to town.
Yeah. So, you know what? I hardly slept. I really hardly slept. But it was so you know, after football, you know, I went through a period where, you know, I got into, you know, you get into addiction, you start taking things that you know, I'm not proud of, but it happened, but I'm proud that I don't anymore. You know, so you get into addictive behaviours, but that was the one time in my life, along with football, where I didn't need anything. I was just pumped. I was just, man, as soon as I woke up, you know, I'm talking to the SAS commandos, you know, and they're saying to me, Andy, careful today, do not deviate, people die in this business. You know, a year later, Merrick's dead in Baghdad, blown up. You know, our head security guard, blown up in Baghdad.
Wow.
You know, after telling me, be careful, man, do not deviate from what I tell you.
Looking back, you probably had, they say the Australian cricket captain is probably the most toughest job in Australia.
Yeah, but no, you had no that was...
Come on.
Yeah, that was tough because, you know, and I just, you know, you're not trained for all these things.
You're just a football agent,
but
right?
Yeah, you're a football agent and then Stevens does the deal. I'm at the Bernabeu. Everybody says, they go home, they go back to London.
Yeah, and you're still there side by side.
What do we do with these 1,000 paparazzi chasing us? They camp out the hotel. They start infiltrating the hotel. They become chefs. They become this, they become that.
Do they really?
Oh, yeah, everything. Yeah, yeah. It's a long process. We could be in Madrid. Where if we sat with David back in the day, we'd be at lunch somewhere. And he'd say something like, seven floors up, 150 metres away, someone with a lens. And I'd look and he'd go, next day, Hello Magazine Madrid, Hello Magazine Europe, that guy with the lens, picture of us eating where he was saying that had been taken from. So it's just, the chatter amongst the paparazzi is they want the kill shots, the dead shots. So you get a car crash.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's what they want.
And that's cash,
that's
right?
That's the last shot of Diana. Death shot, bleeding, they're the shots. Because I could hear it in Spanish, the chit-chat. Like the commandos would be like, what are they saying? You don't want to know.
Yeah, I'm not actually, I can't tell you that.
That's their world, right?
Yeah. They're looking for, you know, and they create havoc. They create havoc because they want. I had a car crash with Victoria Beckham's sister in it, you know, caused by paparazzi. And, you know, it was a moment in the book where, you know, we were pulled to safety in the end by commandos, you know. But, it was, so traumatic things happen. But for me, look, it was very exciting.
Oh, 100%.
I wouldn't change, I wouldn't swap it. You know, it's like to be in that position has allowed me to write this,
yep.
You know, in a beautiful way. You know, like no one's really ridden shotgun with DB like that. So it's, you know, I wouldn't change it for the world, but I think it would wear you out after a while, like just especially...
The intent day to day.
Yeah, and it was a time where, you know, there was more to it. Victoria's, you know, management... Simon Fuller that looked after the Spice Girls was trying to take David away from SFX, and so there was a lot of kind of political stuff in the background. There was a lot of it was a tough time, but it was a beautiful time. You know, it was he'd go off somewhere, and wherever he went, I was there. So I'd you'd be there with Zidane, with Carlos, and the great thing was, and something that I'm very kind of grateful to them for, but also kind of I feel I earned it, was they didn't see me as an agent. They saw me as David's friend, as a mate that had his back, and that they allowed into their circle also.
Yeah.
Because they don't allow everybody in those circles, you know. It's but I will tell you one thing. At a lunch one day, and you'll like it on a football level, I asked all the Galacticos who they considered the main one, the man. And all, to a T, pointed to Zidane.
Really?
Yeah. They all went him.
Really? Yeah?
Wow.
So Bex, Carlos.
Ronaldo.
All of them went him.
Did they really? Wow. Really?
There you go. And he was
another level, right?
Ball on a string.
Well, like, watching him at training.
Yeah, I was going to say, you're seeing that every day.
Yeah, so I was, I don't know if the right word is privileged, but, man, I was like 20 metres, I was on the touchline. So they're training, and I'm in the middle of training, the balls are going past me, the kit men are there, I'm there with the physios, and, so I'm watching these superstars train up close. So then you see, you see why you reach a certain level, and though you're a good footballer, then you see, wow, this is a whole different beast.
Yeah.
This is a whole different tiger. This is a proper big lion.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. And to get that many in one team.
Oh.
Like.
Oh, and all different in their own ways, like Carlos, like a ninja turtle.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, but 80 box to boxes, up, down. Imagine him halfback.
Oh.
Yeah, rugby league. Oh. Freak. Like, little nugget.
Yeah,
like,
nugget.
Yeah, like, not a Donatello, mate. You couldn't, like, just, and Zidane different. Yeah. You know,
elegant.
6'3", like, big guy. Looks slower than what he is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but, the touch, like.
Football smarts.
Ballet. Baryshnikov, just bringing it down, and, like, people would ping him a ball, and even if it was a bad one, that's what David used to say to me, guys, you can ping a ball that's, yes, maybe even slightly off to Zidane.
Looks a good ball.
You know, he just puts his foot up, and it's like a magnet. Boom, it sticks. Yeah, so.
That's crazy.
The amazing things that you see, amongst all those, it's a very special thing, and, I had the privilege of working within the inner circles of it. I'd have chats with Valdano. Yeah, he'd say to me, "Oh, David's right foot, like Diego's left."
and he'd know.
I'd have those chats walking around the Bernabeu. And then you come back here and you have all that kind of knowledge, and then no one for 10, 12 years asks you anything.
Yeah, that's not right.
Well, it's kind of like, I don't feel like it's not like I wouldn't want to work for anything, but it's kind of like, guys, I have all this knowledge, from watching the under-10s and 11s at Real Madrid every single day, watching them train to the first team, inside the dressing room, listening to Quiroz, to Del Bosque, to Valdano, to Butragueño, these legends. I could impart some of this to our national youth teams, to some A-League, academies or something, and, like, you don't even get asked.
Yeah.
Who's in charge? Who's running the system here that kind of denies that to, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, that denies it.
Yeah, we want to get better. We want to get better. I've sent emails to the old FFA. Would you like, because Alex Tobin, I think, asked me once, I need to do a study. Wait a minute, Barcelona, Real Madrid, Barcelona. I never got a reply back. Yeah, you don't even reply.
Yeah.
And you wonder why you're going the way you're going.
Yeah.
You wonder why they're legendary and you guys are monkeys.
Yeah, that's a total difference. There's a massive difference.
Yeah, yeah.
So take us to the time you did then, because you did work with you were a scout for the Socceroos.
Yes, I was the chief scout for the 2006 World Cup.
Yeah.
2007 Asian Cup.
Yeah.
And that was, to be honest, it came more from Ron Smith, who was my coach at the AOS.
Okay.
And he was
legendary.
Yeah, yeah. He was the director of. Director of football or technical director, of the Socceroos, something like that, yeah. And they got me in for a meeting, him and Arnie, and I didn't see Gus, but I saw Arnie and Ron, and they said, you're off to South America. Ronnie says you need to create a logistical, technical, tactical, geographical dossier of every, nation that we may play against, in the World Cup qualifier. And it ended up Uruguay, yes?
Yeah.
So they said, you're off for 9 months. So I'd go in and out for 9 months, and my base camp was Colombia. And unknown to them, I was still addicted to cocaine.
Oh. Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And guess what? We qualified.
The dossier would have been written pretty quickly, let me tell you.
How good's that?
Yeah, so it was...
But that would have been hard, right, in Colombia?
Oh, mate, it was just some of the... Like, some of the games, some of the stories, like, you go to watch Venezuela, Colombia, I've got Ronnie Smith next to me. You know, people shooting guns in the air, like in the crowd. Bang, bang. Ronnie's going, "Hey, Birch, are they real guns, son?" Yeah, they're real guns. Yeah,
you'll be right, mate. Yeah.
But it was Venezuela, Colombia. Like, it's like a Miss World pageant, like with a football match thrown in the middle. Like, all the Miss Worlds come from Venezuela.
That's right, yeah.
So Ronnie and I are there, like, going, we're watching this game, and it's just like, Miss Worlds everywhere. And at half time, I said to Ron, need to try and kind of, I thought to myself, I need to be a bit professional here. I've got Ronnie, who's my boss. And, you know, do I say something with formation? I go, Ronnie, what do you think the Venezuelans are playing that 4-4? I didn't get past 4-4, whatever. And he goes, don't worry about formation, son. What about the cans?
Yeah. So the next day he was stationed in Colombia.
He's coming to hang out with you every day.
So it was, look, it was, it gave me an opportunity to catch up with friends like Valderrama.
Okay.
And talk about, you know, Carlos is a beautiful man, a hero in the greatest ever. And, you know, he'd tell me stories of being with Pablo Escobar and
really?
And with Andres Escobar and. Yeah, it's just wow, just some unbelievable stories, you know, of that I have that I'm privy to that
not many people would be.
No, he was in tears, you know, telling me stories of those two.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah,
really.
And you know, real good friends for his, you know, it's the two different ones. One's a footballer, the other one the cartel boss.
Yeah.
But in their own way, you know, for Colombian football at certain times, they were good in a way, you know. I mean, Escobar, the drug baron, was, you know, a lot of money was going through football as well.
Yeah, he was funding the league.
Yeah, he was funding the league. So, but it's that's for another book.
Wow.
You know, that's for...
that side of it.
Yeah, you know, that's I'm privy to some wonderful stories there and Carlos is a great guy, you know.
Yeah.
Go to his place in Barranquilla yeah, but going to the football in Colombia was nuts as well. Yeah, the FFA give you tickets, you know, to turn up to a World Cup qualifier, and you turn up in the seat, and there's two of Escobar's henchmen sat in two seats that you've got tickets for.
Oh, yeah, what are you going to say to him?
Yeah, excuse me, and they look at you. Yeah, and my security guard, I had a security guard in Colombia. Security guard goes, Andy, aquí no. So I ended up like
started circling.
I'm 90 minutes. I'm trying to find a seat.
I haven't seen a match.
Wow.
Yeah, and nuts. It's just madness. South America is a whole different beast. For me, it was. But you know what? I made the most of it. I was going through my own troubles. It was a bit of an escape.
Yeah.
You know, from my own for my peace of mind and. I enjoyed it. Yeah, Caribbean Hyatt by the Caribbean.
Yeah, doing whatever you want to do.
How good.
Uncle Frank paying for everything. Happy days.
How good. And we qualified. That's a massive tick. All right, so, and you looked after Timmy Cahill as well.
Yeah, Timmy was, he was one of the boys I brought to the office that they were chasing as a company. Yeah, they chased everybody, Dwight York, you know, the whole lot. But Timmy at the time was a young kid that was, starting to make noise, and Tony said, "We can't get this kid. Australian. His dad was English, and he knew some solicitors in the East End of London." And kind of like, I said to Tony, "You're scared that if you take Timmy, they're going to come for you." I said, "They probably will, but I'll get you Timmy." So I took Timmy and Lucas in the next day, and Timmy, you know, we did the deal for Everton, and just a wonderful.
Wonderful human.
Look what he's done, I think, for the nation. For me, he's the greatest soccerer of all time. You know, and people will argue it. But if you look at the stats in that book and his goal-scoring record at international level for a player that wasn't a nine.
And was told he'd never make it, too.
So his stats at international level were up with Ronaldo and Messi and Shearer and people like that for, you know. But, you know, you're talking about a kid who had air like Jordan.
Could jump.
He had air like Jordan. He had timing. He, you could play him, drop him six, and he could play like Keane. Just
tough as well, yeah.
Yeah, and just a desire to, you know, put his head in anywhere.
Yeah.
You know, but he had bicycle kicks. He had everything. Was he Ronaldo Nazario? Yeah. Was he Maradona? Was he Messi? No. But, you know, we as a nation, I don't think we appreciate what how he good he actually was. You know, and important goals at times in a World Cup. You know, in the Asian Cup.
And the Netherlands goal.
The volley.
Yeah.
You know, if he's wearing Adidas that game, it's the goal of the World Cup.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know,
yeah.
Correct?
Exactly yeah. right, yeah.
You know, it goes to the MLS. Fastest goal in MLS history. It's a piss take.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
if you look at it, and it's a kid that, you know, and he's still going. You know, we're in touch now. You know, he's chasing more dreams.
Doesn't stop, does he?
No, he does not stop, and he will. There's more to be conquered. You know, he hasn't even started.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was Timmy, and then Rogic. I found
Tommy Rogic.
Yeah, Tommy was
from Canberra.
Yeah, he was in Canberra, and I went to watch him play. And Ron Smith said, "I've got a kid here that kind of a bit Zidane-ish and stuff," and went to see him. And after about 10 minutes, his dad said, "What do you think?" And said, "Rubbish." As he, you know, does, he's got a beautiful touch. I noticed a beautiful touch immediately. Like, you noticed that straight away. Like, the ball had come in that sublime, you know.
The left foot.
The good players have a sublime touch, you know. And he had that, he saw that straight away. But then he'd walk around with his hips, you know, hands on his hips. And he was lazy, he didn't track back. And, you know, this was 16, 17. And I said, leave him with me for 6 months. It was at the time I was the strength conditioning coach for the Australian Olympic Games boxing team.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Jeff Horn was involved. With us. And he was all part of that team. And Tommy came in and trained for three to six months. I'm not sure the timeline, but he came in. It was minimum 3 months. He didn't do any of the sparring, of course, but he trained with the Olympic Games boxing team that went off to London.
Okay.
Up at the AIS. Never missed a session, track work, strength, the whole lot. And my plan was to break him. You know, I said to the dad, I want to break him so he doesn't want to play football anymore. And if I don't, then... And he was a kid that, you know, if Tommy's genetically had been born with a little bit better VO2 max and a little bit quicker, could play for Real Madrid. You know, that's the difference.
Okay.
You know, he had all... Yeah. You know, I've seen Zidane and I've seen Tom. Mm. Similar ilk, similar kind of flow and quality, but just one is a... one's a Holden V8, the other's a V6.
Yeah, okay.
You know, it's like people say to me, how do you kind of compare Grella and Valeri? Grella was a, you know, V8 supercar, and Valeri was the same kind of car, a Commodore, or a, you know, Holden or a Ford around Bathurst, but it had a 6-cylinder instead of a V8.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the difference.
Yeah.
And if you've driven both, you'd know the difference.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? That's kind of like... That's the difference in how I look at
And you know
different athletes, you know. But Tom, again, you know, my partner Daniel and I've done all these deals, you know, up until now. The last one was the greatest deal in for a foreigner in Celtic history, and you know, for a kid from Canberra, 16, 17, they go and play at Celtic, you know, and I've gone there and watched him play v Rangers, and people can knock the Scottish league. And a lot of people do, but I say to a lot of those people, you wouldn't be able to play in the Scottish League yourself.
Yeah, it's tough.
Yeah.
It's tough.
You know, Aberdeen away is not an easy game on a Tuesday night in the middle of winter.
Freezing cold.
Yeah, Rangers. It's a tough, tough league. Yeah. So for a kid from Canberra that I was able to help and has won 12 trophies.
Yeah, good on him.
For me, and played Champions League and played this and that, I think fantastic.
Yeah, he's played some of the best stadiums, hasn't he?
And Valeri went to Inter Milan. You know, he, again, probably physiologically not cut out for the top level of Serie A, but hey, he played 60, 70 games for the Socceroos. He played Serie B.
Yeah.
So what a wonderful career. He came back and played for Melbourne Victory. So that in itself is a wonderful career. And sometimes as we get older and you know, you discuss the mental health of this and that, like, who am I to judge? Who are we to judge if Carl's career was better than his or lesser than his?
You can't.
You know, is 12 years at Melbourne Victory, for example, better than 3 years at Reading?
Yeah.
You know, like, how do we compare? How do we judge? And it's, you know, what everybody does, what they do. And you know, no one's soft and no one's hard. It's just it is what it is, you know. If as you get older, I kind of, I'm more comfortable with all that as well.
Yeah, of course.
When I was younger, it wasn't cool to speak out, you know.
Yeah.
That, you know, you were homesick or you were sad or you were this or you were that. And but it's key in the game now, you know. It's important. Yeah. And, you know, that's where I'd like to kind of, you know, get more involved and help. You know, I've been through a lot.
Yeah, absolutely.
Good and bad, you know. And I don't think you can impart knowledge and you can't, you know, help others if you – I feel you're better for it if you've seen the dark side too.
Yeah, 100%.
You know, you understand it.
Now, COVID obviously has hit the world and you've got family over in New Zealand that you probably wouldn't have seen for a long time now, would it?
Yeah, it's – I don't know the time. That's maybe 12 months, maybe a little bit longer. But, yeah, it's tough. You know, I've got Dan, my son-in-law's a UFC fighter. You know, top 5-6 in the world in the lightweight division. And he married Isabella, my daughter. Have a granddaughter called Zoe. They're going great. You know, they're doing their stuff in Auckland. It's a beautiful country.
Yeah.
They've got it all nice down there. And, you know, he's opened his own combat centre and look, the fight game's a tough one as well. He lost his last one, but he'd won 4-5. And you know, the UFC game, one punch changes the whole, you know, it doesn't mean you're good or bad. You know, so he's a good guy, you know, and he's working hard and he ain't going to stop till he gets close, you know, a shot at that title. And but for me, you know, I think it's really important as you get older to know that your daughter is a beautiful man, a gentleman.
Yeah, okay.
Apart from the fighting, you know, that's a bonus. That's you know, that's the bonus on top of it. And it's kind of weird how my daughter then ends up marrying a sportsman as well
and stuff like that. Yeah. And an elite sportsman too. Yeah, yeah.
It's kind of, I don't know if it's destiny or whatever, but it happened. And she kind of understands everything that goes with, you know, that sporting life.
The sacrifices and stuff like that.
But, you know, just, you know, at the wedding in Thailand and stuff, and, you know, I was with my dad and mum, and, you know, we were like, you're just happy when your daughter is with a nice man.
Yeah, and looks after her.
Yeah, it's a real beautiful, peaceful thing.
Yeah, good.
Yeah. Oh, that's awesome.
And obviously COVID, it allowed you to write the book too.
Well, it was a great opportunity because you know, it happened. You know, people were stuck indoors for a while and everyone was kind of... so I really took time to write it down and you know, it drove me mad a little bit because you got to relive, you know, good and bad. And you know, I've left 40, 50,000 words out. I wanted it more concise and just kind of, you know what, I'm going to give you 12, 13 chapters and it's going to be hard-hitting whether that's good or bad. And, you know, we all kind of want to leave some sort of legacy of sort and I needed some truths to come out to be corrected that aren't quite right.
Yep.
And, you know, but you wait around like a poker player sometimes and you kind of just, you want to say something, well, that's not right and that's not right. But what backup do you have? You know, and then certain things came into play and I was able to, you know, I said to Janie, it's our time now. The cards, I've got the right cards. Bang, bang, bang. We're playing poker now in Vegas. And I wrote this, you know, and good and bad because, you know, if the world reads it, it's a fascinating story. From a migrant story to believing you can play on the biggest stages of Europe to a multitude of other things that, you know, you would only see in a James Bond movie. Seriously, and it kind of happened to me and you know, it's just madness. It's the tie to Beckham. It's, the book is about me. Certain bits are about David and then it's added a bit of glamour to the whole thing. But, you know, and I don't know whether that's written in the stars either. You know, in 1994, David Beckham signed for Predator. In 1984, I tested Predator for Adidas, you know, in Canberra. And I said to Craig Johnson, they work.
Yeah, okay.
So, you know, I don't know if it's in the stars
fate,
or
it's, the stars are aligning.
Yeah, so you know, it's a good book, it's a good story and hopefully you know, it's good reading for all, you know, kids, you know, that want to do anything, you know, but even more for kids that are into the sporting world. you know, the right things and the wrong things. You know, see, I don't have to state them. They're there.
Yeah.
Read the book and you'll realise if you do this, this and that, there's a real good chance that you'll end up, you know, playing wherever you want. If you go down this path...
You're not going to get there. And if you can go and get Riding Shotgun, right, we're going to the book launch tomorrow night, which is the 27th. This podcast will be out after the book launch, but... What a wonderful story, Seva.
I can't wait to read it. I won't be sleeping for a few nights.
It's a two-part series that we're going to release because we couldn't get it done in one. Yep. And look what we've got out. So, Birch, thank you.
It's been a great pleasure.
We hope you've enjoyed it, mate.
Yeah, it's just been easy. It's never daunting, you know, going places. But like, I feel comfortable with Seven. He's told me about you, and I just... for me, it was a real kind of. I wanted to come and be part of the show. I wanted to help you guys, you know, turn it into a monster. You're going great, and you know, you've made me feel really, you know, warm and comfortable. And I've just been here chilling, chatting.
Perfect. We'll hang there.
We're loving it.
Yeah. Hang there, and we'll finish off with one of the best finishes you've ever seen. So, this podcast can't happen without our wonderful sponsors. So, mate, one of our wonderful sponsors, visit letsbemates.com.au for all your NBN and mobile needs. Ignify Legal, again, go and see Ian and the team. They'll look after you. Jeff Lambert, again. Seva, how good is he for us, eh?
Oh, he makes you look great every week.
He makes me look good. Visit jefflambert.com.au. And again, if you need a podcast like we did, Jeff helps us out, right? It's so easy to deal with. The Planning Station, made for any of your events, anything you need. DS Dipping and Excavations. Huh?
Yeah, he's all right.
He's all right. Best lay in Penrith or best lay in it. And MG Active, still keeping Seva in shape. So get down there and go for a run. Andy Burnell, thank you so much.
Thank you very much
for the last 2 hours we've had, mate.
Thank you, and just a little message to MG. Thank you for the
words. This is your book.
For the words, you've got a book. Little message in there for you, and I'll be wearing those hats in Canberra, mate. Stirring the Raiders up for you.
Absolutely. Well, guys, we hope you enjoyed that at home because it's been one of the best chats we've had. So, Andy Burnell, thank you, pal.
Thanks for listening, guys. Thanks,
Seva. Thanks, Seva.